On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this is Bob Keebler, bringing you Robert K. Pasquale versus the Commissioner, an important case regarding Roth conversions, excise tax deficiencies, step transactions, the 6651 addition to tax penalty, and the 6662A accuracy-related penalty. This case also involves an important statute of limitations issue. After I read this case, I knew that there was no one other than Barry Picker I would like to interview on this case, the importance of this case, and on its sister case, Swanson versus a Commissioner. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Bob.
Barry, tell us what happened here and how did this guy, seemingly not an overly sophisticated guy, a gentleman certainly not with tens of millions of dollars, how did he get himself all the way to the tax court with such a complicated set of issues?
Well, what happened is that he got involved with some sort of Roth restructuring that basically arranged for him to move money through corporations, through different IRA accounts, and eventually get from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. And the way it was sold was that without any taxes, and that, of course, this being perfectly legal. Now, you and I would look at a transaction like this and say, you know, clearly this is a step transaction that, you know, we would not believe would ever fly. But this was done through somebody who was at a major accounting firm, and the taxpayer believed that this was perfectly legal. And so he went through this transaction, having paid what I would consider to be a substantial fee, amounting to about 10% of the IRA value. To the firm that set this up. And the IRS came in and said, well, wait a minute, this was not a proper transaction. What you did was you made an excess contribution into a Roth IRA of the entire value of the Roth IRA. Now, the taxpayer tried to argue at one point, well, wait a minute, I only funded the Roth IRA with $2,000. So that's what the penalty should be based on. The IRS counted and said, no, all the money that went into the Roth IRA is subject to the penalty. And the rule for the excess contribution penalty is it's imposed each year. And it's based upon the lesser of the contribution or the fair market value. So he got somewhat of a break because for many of the years the value had gone down. So the penalty was based upon the value in the Roth IRA each year. Now, the penalty is 6%. So the IRS basically were assessing penalties against him 6% each year for the years, you know, that the money was in the Roth IRA. Now, some of the years would have normally been outside the three-year statute of limitation, and this is where it gets very, very tricky. And when you have a 6% penalty, you need to file a Form 5329 and attach that to your 1040. The taxpayer argued that, well, he filed the 1040, and some of these years were outside the three-year statute of limitation. The IRS countered, and the court agreed, that the statute of limitation never started to run on the penalty because the 5329, although attached to the 1040, is a separate tax form. And as you know, if you don't file a tax form, the statute of limitations never starts to run. So they were hit for the excise tax penalty. They could not use the statute of limitation to get out of it for years. And then the IRS came along and said that you also have substantial understatement of tax, and that's the 20% penalty, and that came along for the ride with this. So the taxpayer was basically hit for the 6% and the understatement penalty. They tried to say that, well, you know, we went to a tax advisor and we were given all this information, and the judge countered that said that, you know, you should have realized that this was too good to be true. And it's kind of scary because it's putting taxpayers on notice that they cannot just blindly rely on tax advisors, and they have to do a certain amount of due diligence. And when somebody comes along with a, and I hate to use the term scheme, because the person who promoted this was eventually enjoined from doing this anymore and had his own legal issues. But when somebody comes along with something that sounds like it's too good to be true, the taxpayer is on notice now that they must investigate this further and get opinions from other people that this is, you know, a good transaction and not rely on the person who is basically taking a very large fee for doing this to say that this is all fine and dandy.
So, Barry, let's focus in on the three particular issues that I mentioned up front that are so important. The statute of limitations, the way I understand this, the court found that because the 5329 was never filed, that the statute of limitations never began. Is that the heart of it?
That's the heart of it as far as the 6% penalty, the excise penalty on the excess contribution, correct.
So in a normal setting, if I'm a and I'm going to jump out of this context, but if I'm a 75-year-old gentleman and I take money out of my IRA and I file a 5329, or if I'm a 55-year-old gentleman taking money out under substantial equal periodic payments, whatever I'm doing, if I file that form, I'm going to get a 3-year statute of limitations as long as I'm not understating by more than 25%. And if I understate by more than 25%, I guess you'd get a 6-year statute. Is that right?
That would be correct. But it's not just a matter of putting in the form. I mean, there obviously has to be information on that form. I don't believe that if you just throw in a 5329 and attach it to every 1040, you're going to be safe from any excise penalties. I mean, I think there has to be something on there to indicate to the IRS, and if you read the case, they specifically say filing a form that gives the IRS information enough to ascertain what the tax liability is. So just filing a blank one, I don't think is really going to give the protection of the 3-year statute of limitation. There has to be something on there as to why you're filing the form.
Now, the service also had asserted, so we know they asserted the excise tax deficiencies for a 6% excess, or for the excess contribution, which is a 6% tax, and that was imposed for a number of years on nearly $1 million worth of value. So that is a tremendous penalty for these people to bear. Now, on top of that, the service also imposed the penalty under 6651A, which could be, I think, as high as 25% of the actual penalty in this case. Does that sound right to you?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
And then why did the accuracy-related penalty under 6662A, why did that penalty go away? That was stipulated, wasn't it?
I believe there was a separate issue that the IRS put in that penalty in case another issue went against them, and that became moot. So the 6662A penalty in this case did not come into play.
No.
One thing, though, to keep in mind, Bob, in looking at both cases were interesting. I'm talking about the Swanson as well as the Paschal case. Both were argued by the same attorney. Both were in front of the same tax court judge. Both taxpayers used the same program to try to get around this. The only difference was Swanson conceded the deficiency on the excise tax penalty, excise tax, and only argued on the penalty and lost. But one of the things that struck me was that in both cases it appeared, because of the income tax statute limitation, the money that, when it came out of the traditional IRA, was not taxed. And that was about $1.3 million, I think, in one case, $1.2 in the other. So there was this tremendous income tax deficiency that was not paid because it was conceded that the statute of limitations on that, because that went back to about the year 2000. So you have these people now in front of a judge who the judge is looking and saying, well, you know, you went through this program, which was not a legit program, but because of the statute of limitations, you're actually getting away with an income tax liability, which is, you know, substantial, clearly on that type of, let's call it, Roth conversion. And now, we now have this, so we don't have that hammer to hit you with, but we have this hammer, And I got the impression from reading these two cases that the judge was saying that, you know, you may have gotten away with it on one side, but whatever we could do on this other side, we're going to do, and, you know, you're not going to get away with it. So, you know, whereas the taxpayers are put on notice about, you know, not relying on professional advisors when deals are too good to be true, I think the other side of that is, you know, when you come into tax court with unclean hands, the judge is not going to be very kind to you when it comes to making the decision.
And I think that's a fair analysis. Let's talk a little bit, though, big picture-wise. Now, this has happened in another couple of recent cases we've ridden on for Lineberg, but the court did impose the 25% penalty. So let's just say my excise tax penalty was $100. By the time you throw the other 25% penalty, we're now up to $125. That's pretty easy math. But what it means realistically is the IRS has a very big club, because the 6% penalty now becomes 7.5%. The 50% penalty, if you fail to take money out at 70.5%, becomes 62.5%. And the 10% penalty becomes, if you're taking money out before 59.5%, in essence becomes 12.5%. I'm wondering what you think about that. What are practitioners supposed to do to make sure the statute of limitations runs on these issues?
Well, I think you have to look at the cases in terms of, again, what's going on. I think that for the, let's call it, average practitioner who, you know, has somebody who failed to take a minimum distribution, things like that. But it was, you know, it was an oversight, and you know, I think you and I get this with a certain amount of regularity. I think the answer is that, you know, you just filed a 5329 with a letter saying that we want the penalty to be waived because, you know, it was an oversight. We didn't realize it. We fixed it as soon as we found it. Similarly, with a, you know, somebody who made an accidental excess contribution, you know, you file a 5329, you pay the 6%, you fix the problem. And I think in those cases, you're not going to be seeing the IRS coming after you for, you know, extra penalties and things like that. I think that it's cases where you're trying to game the system that the IRS will come down very hard, and the tax court seems to go along with that.
No, and that's exactly what I'm seeing here, too. And I think the moral of the story is what Mr. Pasquale should have done is obtained an independent opinion before he gave $120,000 to the accounting firm to implement this transaction. And maybe he should have stepped back and said, how in the world am I going to convert an entire IRA over to the Roth IRA and not pay any tax? This has to be too good to be true. Barry, any final comments?
Well, you know, the one thing is, and I know this is my experience, I think yours, is that somebody will come to me with this thing, and I'll look at it and I go, this will never work. And the person won't hear that because it's not the answer they want. And people have a tendency sometimes to only hear what they want to hear. And the other person gave them, you know, really great news, and then you and I come along and we give them bad news, and people discount bad news. So, you know, that is what people should do, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it will always work out the way it's supposed to work out.
Barry, on behalf of Lineberg Information Services, I just want to sincerely thank you for being with us today and bringing all this insight and wisdom to a difficult case.
It was my pleasure, Bob.